Good morning. It is Thursday, October 30th, 2025, and you've tuned into The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here, as usual, with Jim Healy. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing? Did you pedal in?
I did.
And how was it? It's sort of foggy?
Foggy and a little eerie. Very quiet downtown right now. Not a lot of traffic, but once you get across 5th, there's the usual amount of traffic, but I was able to, once I came downtown, it felt a little bit haunted house-ish.
Well, it was, when I walked from where I parked my car down First Avenue, there was not a soul.
Yeah.
But Ben Olson putting out the readers in the different places drop. You know, and I got, how wonderful. You know, here is the editor of the weekly newspaper putting out and copies. And I just thought, all is well.
Very charming, yes.
Yeah, it's very Norman Rockwell-ish small town.
That eerie, it felt sort of East Coast, I don't know, something out of Stephen King or something.
The fog,
yeah. but actually, it was a very lovely morning. Nice pedal in, quiet. Colors are nice and still in the trees, you know.
Well, speaking of colors, I mean, we've got Robin Campbell and Patty Erickson from the Kinnickinnick Plant Society. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Robin is all autumnal. No, not Robin. Patty is all autumnal. Get closer to the microphone so people can see you.
Okay, does that work?
There you go. And Jack is wearing Halloween pants.
I'm wearing my bright orange pants that I get out really pretty much once a year, maybe twice, depending. Yeah, okay. Sometimes for April Fool's Day or something, I guess I might wear them again. But yeah, this is that time of year.
That time of year. How did you folks respond to the morning in terms of eerie, quiet?
It was dark when I got out of bed.
Ah, yeah. The days are getting shorter and shorter. Mm-hmm. I sort of like that. You know,
if you can stay in bed.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And if I were a wild plant, native plant, how would I be feeling right now?
You'd be shivering a little bit, and you'd be sort of maybe dropping some leaves and kind of pulling in and pulling all your resources down into your roots and getting ready to hunker down.
Until next fall. Next spring. Next spring.
Mm-hmm. I should do the weather report before we talk too much about plants.
Okay. Right? I'm game.
Okay. Also, coming up this hour at 8:45, the board president and the new executive director of the Panada Theater are going to be dropping by, brand new, and
above the crease.
Is that in here in this paper that you handed me?
No. It's also in the Bonner Bee.
Oh,
the Bonner Bee and in the Reader.
Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of news, tomorrow's North Idaho News of the Week. It's our last one before the election, and we will be talking to Ben Olson, who you just saw on the street, and talking about whatever else is in the news, plus just a little bit of. They have in this big reader that you set on the desk, they have their, I believe, their candidate questionnaire.
And they do.
So they'll be kind
of. It's informative. I did glance through it before I came in here, and I'd encourage everyone to get educated about the elections on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, it hasn't been making news. If you only pay attention to national news, you haven't heard anything about it. But here in town,
it's important.
It's important.
Mm-hmm.
The weather report is as follows. It is currently 40 degrees in our in the alley behind this radio station. There's a high today of 48 degrees with areas of fog, and then sun predicted. The sun is going to peak out. And it doesn't look like we see precipitation.
I did notice that.
It looks like it's going to be sunny. Right now, it's pretty gray through our skylight, but I think it's going
to. What happened to the word previously when you talked about fog? Patchy. What happened to do they use the word patchy?
It's patchy fog tonight.
Oh, it's
after
patchy,
10 p.m.
Patchy fog tonight.
Today, areas of fog.
Ooh, okay.
But they will not be in patches. Apparently, they'll be in blobs, I don't know what the what the alternative is. Yeah, you'd think that would kind of mean the same thing, but that's not the weather report. The Weather Service house style is not that. I am not myself a meteorologist. I just read the report that the National Weather Service sends.
Well, the person writing the report.
And I know, and all these words do have specific meaning.
Yeah. Meaning.
And some people listening, I'm sure, know the difference between areas of fog and patchy fog. Tomorrow, expect patchy fog and then partly sunny with a high of 49. Friday night, little rain moving in. 60% chance of rain. And
it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I predict it can't happen tomorrow night.
Okay. Yeah, that would be disappointing. It's a big day.
And I'd be left with a bunch of candy.
The low is 41 degrees on Friday night, which, for Halloween, that's not too bad.
That's
a high of 49
no, huh?
down to 41. No, tonight, as I said, is going to be 28. That's a little nippy, but yeah, it'll be okay. Saturday, 80% chance of rain, high of 51 degrees. Saturday night, 80% chance of rain, low of 34. Sunday, high of 50 degrees, and then mostly sunny. A little rain in the morning, and then mostly sunny. And on Monday, a 30% chance of rain and a high of 47 degrees.
Okay.
Okay. Quick, before you say hello to your
sister and brother-in-law,
I want to say hello to my mother, who's tuning in from Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, probably the Lindbergh Terminal.
And where is she?
She's flying here. She's flying to Spokane, and she will be here this afternoon.
And will she get to see her grandson dressed up in what costume for tomorrow night?
She will get to see Peter Pan tomorrow night.
What fun.
And he'll be doing the downtown trick-or-treating
as well.
So you might have a chance to see him too, Jim.
Terrific.
I also want to say it is a special day for somebody who you and I both know. He's a good friend of yours. Somebody is turning the big 05 today.
No kidding.
Yeah.
James, that is Jack's and son.
Yep.
And how wonderful. And how does one celebrate, I'm so out of the loop, a fifth birthday? A
lot of balloons, and he opened some presents this morning. Happy birthday, James, if you're tuned in. They're probably getting in the car going to school right about now.
Those are the years where, how old are you? I'm 5 and a half. Mm-hmm. You know, where we fractionalize our, you know, then you get to be my age, you know, it's just I'm in my 70s, or I'm in, you know, we do it by decades, I guess. But before we get too far, my sister said she'd be tuning in this morning with the magic of Alexa. She has this little canister in her kitchen, she and her husband, and they say, Alexa, 88.5 KRFY. And boom, in Arlington, Virginia, she says, good morning, weather 63 now, high of 65 expected today, rainy, dreary morning. Whoa, that's sort of like us. Then overcast skies this afternoon, but we're going to have sun.
Yeah. A quick Halloween forecast, Jim, not a weather forecast, but what's your prediction for Halloween? What's the hot candy item this year?
Oh, that I don't know. We're always curious to see what are the hot costumes. What is it, a princess, or is it a Ninja Turtle, or what? We're geared up, we're ready, and we've got the decorations up, and I just hope that it doesn't rain.
Yeah. We might miss it, you know. A little drizzle, that's not too bad. Bring an umbrella. It'll be fine.
Well, the most fun, though, is people who have children in their early years, the parents come dressed up as the kids, and they don't know what to do, and...
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah. What are we giving away at your house?
Chocolate items. I went down to a distributing store. Can I say the name of Costco?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I can say, and I bought three big bags of 150 pieces each, so I'm armed and ready for 500 kids about.
You're in a pretty hot, high traffic area for Halloween.
We are, and we love it. You know, that we've been keeping tabs for about the last 15 years on the number of knocks on our doors and kids, and we've been as high as 800. I just think it's wonderful. Yeah, I'd love to break it into four figures, 1,000.
Yeah.
You know,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, that traditions are still the anticipation. You know, I don't know how I feel about trunk and treat, you know, where people park their cars and give out of their trunks. You know, I like the houses. You don't know who's going to open the door. And when I was a kid growing up, did they give away nickel candy bars? Mm-hmm. Whoa. I mean, those are the houses that you bowed to when you went by during the regular year. Yeah, you know, it's I was speaking with Robin and Patty earlier, you know, a chance to be out when it's dark. Mm-hmm. And the anticipation of walking up in front of the house, that sort of thing.
Careful on the roads, folks.
Oh, absolutely. Little kitties are out.
Robin and Patty, are you expecting trick-or-treaters this year?
Well, I live in an area. I've been there 24 years, and I've never had a trick-or-treater. So, but we do have some little kids in our neighborhood this year. Too little, probably, for trick-or-treating, but maybe in a couple of years we'll see some. But my grandson is who lives in the Portland, Oregon area, is going as Harry Potter.
Hey. Ooh. Cool. Ooh,
yeah. Uh-huh. That could be fun.
Okay. Trick-or-treaters?
I also live in an area with no trick-or-treaters. No. The first year we had two, and the next year we had two. And we've kind of just stopped because if you only have two, that bag of candy goes a long way.
Yeah. We're more or less the same. We do put out jack-o'-lanterns, though, and I think that draws some people in, I think. But, yeah, very seldom. And we prepare for it a little bit. We get one little bag just in case. Yeah.
Well, if I could make a suggestion to if there are listeners out there who are concerned about leftover candy, you know, in the bags and whatever, with me, I just eat them. What I did last year, I took my leftover candies in their separate little bags out to the food bank, and they put them in a bowl in their office. And as clients come in with little kids, it's like a good use of leftover candy if you're concerned about eating them.
Shall we move on to our main topic of conversation here? What's going on with the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society? Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'm ready.
Well, let's first introduce Patty Erickson, a board member, web administrator, and grant writer.
Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And Robin Campbell, board member. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And vice president.
Ooh. Oh, I forgot about that.
titles.
Yeah, we just get so many, we get immune to them. Okay.
Good morning, Vice President Robin Campbell.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
Thanks for being here. So we have some, I guess let's start just in case people don't know, the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society is what? What is the Native Plant Society?
The Native Plant Society, our mission is to promote the use, knowledge about, appreciation of, conservation of our native plants. Mm-hmm. We live in a truly unique area. We have a tremendous diversity, unlike some other areas, because we are actually located in the world's largest inland temperate rainforest. And so we have plants that you find in temperate rainforests, but we also have plants you find in the Rocky Mountain area. So we're in an area that kind of brings it together. And so we have this huge diversity in our area. And native plants are so important. I mean, they're part of our ecosystem. They interact and are an integral part of the native fauna, all of the wildlife and animals, insects, the soil health. The microorganisms in the soil. It's all a continuous cycle. They're all adapted to each other. They work together and create this beautiful, beautiful area that we live in. So we're all about knowing about it, teaching people about it, and conserving it.
And if someone is interested, before we get into the details, is there a website?
There is a website. It's very easy to remember. It's native.plantsociety.org.
rather than Kinnikinick.
Yes, we don't make you spell Kinnikinick. I've finally learned how to spell it, but we don't make, and my computer now remembers it when I start to type it. It autofills it.
Uh-huh. So nativeplantsociety.org. If you want more information, if you want to become a member, if you want to make a contribution, all those good things.
Yep, all available on our website, which Patty updates regularly, and you can find out what we're doing. Our events are posted on that as well.
Yeah. So that's the mission. How does that express itself? What do you guys do in the community to fulfill this mission?
A lot.
Okay. Yeah, Patty, you take it.
Yeah, we have educational programs for adults as well as children. We do things in the we run the Arboretum. We're in charge of the Arboretum, which is on South Ella between the soon-to-be expanded sewer plant and the museum. Not expanded, upgraded sewer plant. My fingers are crossed. Anyway, that really is our biggest educational space. We have things there in the summer for children and adults. We do a monthly program for 9 months out of the year where we bring in adult educational experiences, and we'll talk about that eventually. And as far as conservation, when there's some issue in the area that has to do with maybe disrupting a population of native plants or something of that nature, we'll write letters to encourage people to save native plants. And we also really do a lot of work encouraging people to plant native plants in their landscapes.
We've also done things like gone out and done counts of native plants in areas that are up for being disturbed. Just to see, let people know what's actually there. And we're very, very active. And I will say the Arboretum, we all not only maintain and run the Arboretum, we created it.
Mm. I'd like to ask you just briefly before we get to the reason why you're here. You said a native plant count. What's that like? I mean,
We did one out at Kinnik-Sioux Land Trust.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we had volunteers from the organization just go out and take areas and identify what native plants are in a particular piece of land.
Okay, you don't like there's one, two, three.
No, maybe there's a large population of X.
Okay, gotcha.
In the northwest corner of Y.
Okay,
something
neat,
like that.
Neat. Yeah. Okay, now let's go for the reason why you're here. That was just a little bit of information for me. I find that when I talked to Rich Del Carlo about bird counts, do you go one, two, oops, they moved now, I'm back to one, that sort of thing. Okay, what are we going to talk about?
Well, we have a couple of exciting things that have happened, and all much of it thanks to Patty. So I'm going to let Patty dive into that.
Thank you, Robin. yes, we dove into the grant world, which our organization hasn't done much of. We received an Equinox grant this year from the Equinox Foundation. And it was sizable enough that we're doing some things in the Arboretum that needed to be done.
Okay.
And three or four big projects are plant ID signs. We have a lot of native plants that we want people to know what they are, not just walk through and say, oh, that's pretty, So, and our plant signs are dilapidated. That's the best way. And there's a mix of signs. So we're going to have uniform signs and updated tree signs, shrub signs, herbaceous plant signs, the whole thing.
Okay.
I think it's between 100 and 150 new signs.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. The second part of the project is two new youth-oriented display signs, kind of interpretive signs. They'll be 2 feet by 3 feet and be located along the main path of the Arboretum. One of them is going to be, I can just tell you a little bit about both of them. We have a beautiful cedar grove, just outstanding cedar grove. And we're going to do a youth-oriented sign on the indigenous uses of cedar. And we're in contact with one of the local tribes working on that collaboratively. And the other sign is going to be Layers of the Forest. From the canopy to the layers below the earth that you can see. And it's going to be interesting and explanatory. And we have engaged a local artist you might know, Randy Wilhelm.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be doing the drawings and being excellent. Our graphic designer. So we're working on both of those. The third big project is the kiosk. We have a kiosk that is outdated, and now a lot of the information has been taken down, so it's not informational. And we're updating that. There's a group that's going to update with a welcome sign and more information about the organization and the arboretum and a map and all kinds of stuff. And then the last thing that we'll do, which will probably take place in a year, I'm guessing, is an audio, create an audio tour. But all this other stuff has to be in place before we can do an audio tour. So those are the big things that we're working on.
I'll just say one thing about the youth signs, which I think is really fun, is they're going to be a little lower so that kids 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 can read them without peering over the top, and so they're really oriented toward kids. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned, you know, the top part and then the soil and whatever. Are fungi considered native plants? Mushrooms?
Well, they're not plants, are they?
I don't
fungi
know.
Fungi are fungi.
I don't know.
Or I might be wrong.
I think they are in the plant kingdom, but they are kind of unusual, yeah.
When I go out huckleberry picking in the July, August, I'm just intrigued by all the different, you know, coming up out of the soil. And I wonder, what do we count them as? You know, are they native plants? And I don't even know how they grow. You know what I mean? Like their spores and whatever, that sort of thing. But I like to look at them.
I don't think there's anybody in our organization who's a fungologist, whatever you would call them. There's a name for that that I can't think of.
It's a mycinologist or something.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Right.
Mycology. That's yeah. it.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different
Jack.
Kingdom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing with the Equinox Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And the mycology of is very interrelated with mm-hmm. the native plants, and they find all these relationships where they talk to each other and they share resources, and sometimes you have to have a certain microrhizome or microorganism for a plant to even grow there. And that's one thing we find out about some of the native plants is you can't just take one out of the forest and plant it in your yard, because if you don't get the proper microorganisms that go with that, that has a symbiotic relationship with that plant, you won't be successful. So
that's why there aren't commercial huckleberries.
Let me tell you, I have tried.
Many people have, including horticulturists and plant researchers. And
but then I thought, you know, that if I get them around my house and my yard, then I don't get to go out into the woods and the adventure of, will I get some or where are they? Yeah, so I want huckleberries to remain independent and from us.
I'd like to jump in and just say Robin mentioned the fact that we are in the world's largest inland rainforest, which is just an amazing thing. Kate Huseman wrote a great article on that a year or two ago in the Sandpoint magazine, and you can pull that up online. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about that, she wrote a great article about it. And then there's also Friends of the Clearwater. They have a website that's quite extensive on that very topic, so you can find out more.
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat her name again?
Kate Huseman, Huisman.
Perfect.
And it's in the Sandpoint magazine. Last year,
I think it was last spring, a year ago.
I think so, 2024. That'd be my guess, too.
I think.
Anyway, it's a fascinating thing, and when you tell people that, they're gobsmacked.
I like being gobsmacked. That'll be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Robin Campbell and Patty Erickson from the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society about, what's new over at the Native Plant Society. One more thing is this, there's an audio tour. soon to come. Is that correct?
That's a year away.
A year away.
At least.
Okay.
But that's part of what we plan to fund with the Equinox grant.
Right.
Okay. Wonderful.
Right.
And that this would be a tour through the Arboretum, I guess. You put on a little headset or something. And
probably use your phone.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it'll be phone-based because we have no way to get you a headset. I mean, you have a headset that hooks up to your phone.
Yeah. Most people
do. Your earbuds.
Right.
But no, it'll be accessible through a QR code on our website.
Okay. And then you can walk through the Arboretum and hear facts as you're moving along.
Yes.
About what you're seeing. That will be neat. I always have questions as I'm going through the Arboretum, and so rarely have a guide.
Whenever I've had an opportunity to use audio, whether through an art museum or whatever, it just increases your enjoyment of the exhibit or what you're experiencing.
What we also hope to do with the ID, planned ID signs, is to have a QR code on each one of those.
Ah, okay.
As many as we can. And that will link to more in-depth information. On a plant sign, you can have, you know, a few bits of information, but not enough. So if you want to dig in, the QR code will lead you to more information.
Okay. If somebody's interested in maybe becoming a member or maybe just learning more about native plants, what do you suggest they do?
Well, go to the website, nativeplantsociety.org. We do have information about us and what we do. There's also membership information. You can come to our meetings. We hold a monthly meeting open to the public where we bring in a speaker. It's usually a very interesting topic. It's always a very interesting topic. What am I saying? Usually. We have membership information there, but come check us out. We're a very interesting group, very active group. We probably have about over 100 members now.
170.
I think. 170
Whoa.
Members.
Whoa, that's excellent.
And, you know, anywhere from 40 to 70 show up at each meeting, depending on the... And we have a fun group because we do a half hour of coffee and treats before the actual meeting starts. So you can come get to know a few people, kind of socialize, and then the meeting starts. And our last meeting, the October meeting, John Hastings, who's a retired local environmental science teacher from the high school, he has this great program which sort of grew out of an advanced environmental science class from the high school. They watched a movie that really made the kids emotional about wanting to do something. It was about coral reefs and the degradation of the oceans and things like that. And so he actually organized trips. He has done four or five now trips to the Dominican Republic, one to Belize, where he takes groups of students and adults who want to go, and they actually get hands-on helping to rebuild these coral reefs. So it was a fascinating program. He had slides and good stories, and having been a teacher all those years and an award-winning teacher, he's very entertaining. So we do have a lot of fun at our meetings.
Our next presentation at a meeting, and I think meeting makes you think of somebody reading the minutes and a gavel and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a program.
Uh-huh.
It's treats in a program.
So can't beat that.
You don't have to sit through any boring organizational, functional kinds of things. But the next one that's coming up in November is Rich Del Carlo. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be talking about the Christmas bird count, which is so engaging and interesting. So
when I see that, I say, are there Christmas birds or is it a Christmas bird count as a time of year? You know, does the adjective apply just to the word bird or is it to bird count?
The Christmas bird for me is the cardinal.
Do we ever see any?
Do we have cardinals up here?
No. But,
that's what,
I'm from the neck of the woods where there are lots of cardinals.
Yeah.
So
same here.
Yeah. So I do miss them.
Oh, the bright red against the white snow.
On a pine tree.
Oh.
Yeah. It's stunning.
But to answer your question specifically, Jim, the Christmas bird count always takes place between December 14th and January 5th.
Okay, so it's a calendar.
It's an annual calendar item. Right.
And it's an Audubon-based thing.
And is that in the area here? And are they looking for counters?
Well, what they do is they get volunteers and they assign them to cars. And we it's a motorized count.
Okay.
And you have one experienced birder, oftentimes with a scope. Mm-hmm. And they go around. They're all assigned an area. So it isn't like helter skelter. We're out there all looking. Mm-hmm. Rich signs a carload to go to a specific area, and they do the count. And then it's all compiled.
Ah, okay.
And then it's sent to Audubon.
They could start in my backyard because we have quail came back, you know, and that is always a treat to see goofy quail, you know, just.
Well, this is within a 14-mile radius of Sandpoint. So it's a bigger, Sandpoint plus.
And the Christmas bird count actually started in 1900. So we've been doing this for a long time, keeping track of how many and noticing the increases and decreases of various bird populations.
One might ask, if one was inclined, what coral has to do with native plants and what bird cone has to do. Well, coral is a native plant. It is a plant.
Right.
And it is native to some areas. So, I mean, there is a tangential relationship. But birds are really important for native plants. And there are some native plants that can't survive, that their whole process of reseeding is related to a bird.
Mistletoe.
Is that one of them?
Yeah. Birds eat the seeds and then they poop in the trees. Because they're parasitic. When I lived over in Eastern Europe, I remember you could see in the wintertime mistletoe. Do we have that? You're nodding your head. Do we have mistletoe here in the United States someplace?
Yes. Well, I know we have it in Oregon because I lived in Oregon. And the house where I grew up, there were some very, very large old oak trees. And there were bunches of mistletoe up in the trees. And yes, the birds eat the berries, and the berries contain the seed, and then the birds spread it around.
Yeah. There's another bird locally, regionally, which we did have a program on, and I can't remember its name, but it eats the seeds, and the process of going through its digestive tract makes the seed ready to
germinate.
Who worked that out? You know, I just think that's neater than heck.
Yeah, and but the thing is, if that bird doesn't exist, then those plants won't continue to exist. They need each other.
And it's truly a symbiotic relationship between trees and birds because birds nest in trees. The trees provide shelter and cover and nesting sites. And so the birds rely on the trees as much as the trees rely, and many other plants rely on the birds.
So my point is, they are related.
Yes.
And that is just way too cool. Yeah. It's just
our programs can always somehow be related back to plants.
Okay, so if people want to see Rich Del Carlo give an engaging presentation.
He always does.
He does. He's good to listen to and extremely knowledgeable
and passionate about it.
Yeah. But if you want to learn more about the Christmas bird count, Rich Del Carlo's the organizer of it, he's going to be giving a presentation. When and where?
It's the third Saturday in November.
Okay.
And that would be...
That would be...
The 21st, I believe.
15th.
November starts on the 1st. That's
yes.
Right.
Yes. Saturday
is the 1st. It's the 15th of November at the library in their large community room. Our social hour starts at 9:30 and the program starts at 10.
Okay. On Saturday, November 15th in the library.
The Ides of November.
That's right.
If there is an Ides in November. There,
and it's also free.
And there'll be cookies there.
There will be cookies and coffee, and there will also be things you could collect for Christmas presents because there will be Marilyn George does beautiful cards and sells them. We have... I don't know if the landscape book will be for sale, but the
Busy Bee.
We talked about that once before. That'll be there and for sale.
We did.
And then we have a new thing just by donation. We have some Nicknick Native Plant Society stickers for your water bottle.
Okay.
Or your car.
Cool. I see on your list of items to talk about tree carving and arboretum.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
Tell me more.
Well, I got really excited about it this week, and I'll just... there was a tree right next to our garden shed that's in the arboretum that we use as our kind of headquarters, mm-hmm. and it had to be cut. And they one of our members who's sadly passed away, Ken Thacker, often would look at that tree and dream about having it carved into something appropriate for the arboretum. So we started that project last week. The carver came in. Oh my goodness, it was so fun. Early morning, and was actually this week. It was Tuesday morning. He has this big rig, and it's all hydraulic. And if there had been a five-year-old available to watch that, they would have been in heaven. Yeah, the truck moved up. He had hydraulic jacks on the truck.
Uh-huh.
He had his own crane attached to the truck. And the trunk was about 15, 20 feet tall. And of course, it needed to be shortened. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so the carver that's going to do the plant vine carving for us, what he does for safety reasons and for better carving is he cuts at the bottom. He cuts off, leaving about a 1 foot stump. Then he transports the piece of wood that's going to be carved to his studio.
Ah, uh-huh. Okay.
And then carves there and then reattaches when it's finished.
Uh-huh.
So it is a safer process. He doesn't have to worry about bystanders getting chips of wood in their eyes. He doesn't have to worry about weather or those kinds of things. But anyway, it was a very exciting morning to spend time out there blocking the pathway so nobody would come in. But watching this person who has enormous skill cutting this stump down, it was, you know, 15 feet
what
of tree.
What kind of tree?
It was a Douglas fir tree, and it was diseased, and the city felt that it needed to come down, and we agreed. Mm-hmm. So they did cut it fairly high. They left it about 20 feet tall. So we have this nice stump.
Chunk of wood that
the carver took. He will evaluate it and make sure that it is sound and mm-hmm. able to mm-hmm. be carved. And if not, he said he has something he can substitute. But at any rate, we will have a nice carving.
It won't be 20 feet tall, though.
No.
He took an 8-foot chunk of it.
Okay, and when will the carving be completed?
Next year. Next spring.
Wow. And along with the audio tour.
And the new signs and all the exciting things.
Yes, so. That's the thing about this Innovia grant. We have to spend the money within a year. So we're going to be really busy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, big spenders. One thing I'd like to ask both of you is, what's your favorite native plant? I think I've asked you this before when you've been on the air with us. If you had one native plant that you look at and you go, oh, oops, silence has descended.
Oh, no, I can talk about what. It's interesting because mine has really morphed. And my favorite native plant is one that was considered a pest in my growing up years in South Dakota.
Hmm.
And they would spray the ditches and all of that kind of stuff and the milkweed. I don't know why they wanted to get rid of the milkweed, but it went with everything else. But milkweed is so important, and it goes through all of these iterations. You know, it comes up out of the ground late. Mm-hmm. You know, the first year that I said, we've lost all of our milkweed. They didn't come up. Well, there it appeared a little later. You know, it's brave, but not brave enough to come out when it's really cold. And then it has the most stupendous blossoms. I find them just amazing.
Is the milkweed the one that monarch butterflies like?
Yeah, okay. And the monarch.
Plant those. Get those out there.
And then in the fall, they have the pods that developed. And then the pods are just elegant. They're just gorgeous, and this wonderful fluffy stuff comes out of them. Mm-hmm. So I like their changes, as well as the fact that they don't only support monarchs. Yeah. You know, if they only supported monarchs, you know, we'd need 10 plants because we don't have that many monarchs coming through here. But they are wonderful for all kinds of pollinators.
Okay. And Robin?
Well, I can't say that I have a favorite.
It's like choosing among
plant.
Your children.
It really is. But one that I've been fond of for many, many years is our native wild roses. Ooh. They are so fragrant and so simple and pretty that I do love our native wild roses.
Mm-hmm. Do you find them easy to grow?
Well, I have some that grow wildly on my hill. I haven't ever tried to grow them, to cultivate them in the yard. I think they might be a little tricky. Though we do have a nice group of them in the arboretum. There's a place where they make a kind of an arbor and you can walk through.
Ooh, and, the smell must be heavenly.
Oh, it's gorgeous when they're blooming. Mm-hmm, so I don't think they're too difficult to grow. They are rather thorny.
Very thorny. Thorny. Our native rose bush that was little when it was young is now ginormous and fighting with the milkweed.
Oh.
It's in a patch where that rose would like to have the whole thing. It's probably now 4 feet at least in diameter.
Why can't they just get along?
They're fighting for resources. Does that sound familiar?
Most definitely.
Well, Patty, Robin, is there anything else we need to mention before we turn the airwaves over to the Panetta Theater, who I notice are waiting in our hallway?
I can't think of anything specific. Just take a look at our website. Come to one of our programs.
November 15th. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Walk through the Arboretum.
Yeah.
Every day, I walk through the Arboretum every day because it's our dog walk territory. Mm-hmm. And there's never a day that there isn't something new and interesting, and the smells and the sights. And right now, there are some really, really gorgeous trees.
And one more time, where the Arboretum is located?
The Arboretum is located in Lakeview Park, the end off of Ella Street, next to where the water treatment plant is, and the museum. So it's kind of a 1.5-acre strip of land in between there that has gorgeous native cedar, Douglas fir, huge trees, as well as all the understory, which we have mostly planted. And
if you're walking through, look for the bear.
That's all you're going to say.
There is a bear who lives in the Arboretum.
Okay. Thank you both so very much for keeping 88.5 KRFY on your agenda, for sharing these wonderful news and stories. And we're going to transition to our next group with a song that is appropriate for tomorrow night.
Thank you for having us.
For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers with the Monster Mash. Probably the most popular Halloween carol, would we say? I think so. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack. I'm here with Jim. And we just said goodbye to Patty and Robin from the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society. And now we say hello and good morning to Sean Baim, the president of the board of directors of the Panetta Theater. And introducing to these airwaves, Heather White.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're the new executive director of the Panetta Theater.
That's what I hear.
Very exciting. Yeah. And in the middle of a media blitz, I hold in my hand the Sandpoint Reader, and I see right there on page one, or you know, the first page of news anyway, is your picture.
Exciting.
This is a big day. Is this your first official day on the job?
No, tomorrow. Oh. Tomorrow, according to the newspaper.
It's actually November 1st.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Starting in November.
So it wouldn't be tomorrow. It'd be Saturday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's a weekend. Take it off.
I know.
Yeah. We want to get as much free work out of her we can before she actually starts. So
Wise.
Let's see. The Panada Theater. Well, we know most of the people listening to this radio station probably know everything there is to know about the Panada Theater, but it is a nonprofit organization. Owns and manages the Panada, the building, the famous Panada Theater downtown, which has been there since 1927. And your structure is such that you're governed by a board of directors, and the station is then administered by a staff that is led by an executive director. And that's you.
And that is me.
Okay. So I guess diving into it, you're going to, I'm sure, be learning a lot as you go along and feeling your way, you know, feeling your way into it. But right now, I don't know. What are you looking forward to about this job?
Oh, a lot of different things. I'm really, really excited to get in, get my arms around the administration and really working with the staff whom I've gotten to meet this week. Fantastic group of people. The other group are the volunteers. So I'll be there Saturday evening to just kind of observe and meet people.
Arsenic and Old Lace.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to get to meet everybody that's involved with the theater. Mm-hmm. And then also just really getting out into the community and really getting to meet all of our community members, our patrons. So that's what excites me the most. And to be in this position with such an awesome theater that's and the highlight of our community. So I'm really, really excited to be a part of all of this. Yeah.
So many people in the community don't know you. Could you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Well, I'm Heather White. I live here in Sandpoint with my husband and my son, who is in the third grade. So he's very excited about tomorrow, obviously.
Yay.
I actually hail from the Seattle area. I was born, raised, and lived there most of my life, or all of my life, up until about 5 years ago when we moved over here to Sandpoint. And I brought with me a remote role that I was working at the time with Boeing. And then I've had since done another role as an FP&A manager for another global SaaS company. And then I took on a teaching position over at MCS, Music Conservatory Sandpoint, did some piano teaching there, and got to meet a lot of our community that way as well. So this just seems like a real natural fit for me to move into this position and pull from both sides of my, you know, my artistic side and my business side. So I'm really excited to be able to do that.
Yeah. well, Sean, it was a long hiring process here. What are you hopeful for? What are you hoping to see now that there's a new executive director in place, as far as, I guess, the direction of the Panada Theater?
Yeah, so when the board had started out looking for a new executive director, I had said, we need somebody with a business background and an arts background. And I'm like, does somebody exist like that that actually has a degree in art of some kind and a degree in business of some kind? And we would jokingly say that that person doesn't exist. And then that person walked into the Panada in the form of Heather White. So we're super excited with that. What we're looking for as far as the board is to support Heather 100%. She's got some great ideas with what she wants to do with the structure of the Panada, which has been loose at times in the past, and we've been through some executive directors. And we're looking to build a foundation for a long-term executive director with the Panada, finally. And we feel like we found that with the potential of that with somebody in Heather. She's just really impressed us through the three rounds of interviews. We had an extensive group of 9 people, all pretty qualified, and Heather just won us out in the end. So we're very happy that she's accepted the position.
Well, can you give us a rundown of what some of those ideas might be? Anything particularly exciting that you think coming to the Panada Theater? Or is this, this might be internal. How about, how is this going to, the new hire going to be visible to people who aren't volunteers or aren't super involved in the Panada, but just the members of the public who like to go to the Panada from time to time and go see an event? Any changes coming that you can shout out?
Well, I think we've got a great program that's mm-hmm. in front of us, and so I'd like to move into this role and just mm-hmm. kind of absorb all of that, and then I look forward to. You know, we've got a lot of theaters in Idaho that are of the same genre, vaudeville movie houses. I would love to reach out and establish some relationships there. Mm-hmm. We also have similar like theaters in the adjacent states in Montana and Washington. It would just be really, yeah. really great to start exploring what those theaters are doing and see if we can kind of yank on their best practices and see what we could do for our theater here as well. But also preserving the integrity of our Panetta Theater and our mission and our vision, you know, and our values as they are. I think there's, I think it's wonderful. I'd like to really wrap my arms around that by exploring, you know, some other opportunities, some, you know, maybe some new programming that we could bring into town in collaboration with these other theaters as well.
Mm-hmm. Continuing with kind of a mix of the performing arts, or, you know, local theater, touring musicians and movies as well. Just keeping that blend more or less in place as is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. And my favorite part too, is to really engage our younger, you know, populations at the kids at the music school, music mm-hmm. conservatory school, the kids that are in, you know, to really give them that opportunity to be performing on a stage. And, you know, when I was a piano teacher and I had a full studio in Berrien, Washington, and, that was always the hard part about, you know, running a music studio was to have a place for our students to perform. And so to have this type of a theater, especially for our younger generations too, to be able to come in and really showcase their artistic talents and their hard work is just phenomenal. So I really want to hang on to that as well.
Yeah. let's see. The Panetta Theater is also a building.
Yes, it is.
A historic building that is coming up on 100 years old, and that poses some challenges, I think. Of course, the roof was replaced not too long ago, which is a relief.
And maybe Sean can talk about the north wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the north wall interior was restored. And
so what does restored mean?
Well, so a lot of theaters around the country they'll have somebody come in and basically repaint the walls.
Right, right.
And repaint the interior of the theater. We did not do that. Greg Marsters with Custom Plaster in Idaho, he's a historic restorationist, and he cleaned the wall using approved techniques. And then they go around and they do what's called sounding, which is basically tapping the wall, looking for cracks and parts of delamination. Okay. They inject product in that helps seal the wall. And then they do fine touch-up with smaller painting areas to mm-hmm, try to restore mm-hmm. it back to its original grandeur. In that, we lost the sick chicken, RIP. I know that's a big thing. Funny enough, the Panetta is now going to be debuting sick chicken swag. We have hoodies, T-shirts, and hats for all those that want to memorialize the sick chicken forever. But yeah, so that's what we did in the north wall. And then we're going to be going for funding on the south wall. Mm. We need to fix, we have a delamination issue on the outside of the building where the stucco is coming off, right. which is causing a potential for water intrusion. We want to get that fixed. That's around $50,000 to repair. And then we want to do the south interior wall of the theater. And Greg wants to do that as well. We really want to keep the ball rolling with that. Additionally, we have pricing coming back from a local contractor for the new bathroom going in the southwest retail space. And we're also, the board approved funding for drawings for the lobby pass through into the little theater to begin the construction, the early construction process of that. So there's a lot of things going on with the building. We just feel like the board has a ton of forward momentum. Heather is really on board with all this. She's really forward looking at this. And one of the things she doesn't mention, I don't think that I feel is important for the board and probably for our customers, is to bring a sense of continuity in how the Panetta handles its business. Rental agreements, contracts, all the boring kind of stuff that happens behind the scenes that's been messy at best in the past with the Panetta is going to come into a real alignment with how it should be to make sure that the Panetta is financially sound into the future.
Isn't the Drunk Chicken in the Little Theater? Isn't there when that was redone? So there is a
Rendition of it. We documented the sick chicken, the drunk chicken, the vomiting vulture. I've heard a lot of different terms for it. I call it the sick chicken, but we documented as if it was a piece of fine art, and we are going to recreate that. And it will be on display at some point in the lobby of the theater.
Excellent.
In memory.
Yeah. Let's see. Any, so the big construction projects are underway, big not underway literally right now,
In the plans.
The process is ongoing.
In motion.
In motion. Restoration is in motion.
The 100-year celebration anniversary coming up in soon.
Soon. I know. We can't believe it.
It's 2027.
It's on the way. We have a great program.
This is KRFY 88.5 Ponderé.
That means it's 9 o'clock. You're right. Yeah. It is indeed 88.5 KRFY Ponderé. Sorry about that.
Interrupt, we have to say that according to our FCC license. So we're not being rude.
Yeah, no problem. It just pops up.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, we've got great programs set up for 1927. For 2027. Sorry. We're going to have every month. We're going to have a Academy Award-winning movie starting in January, and we're going to start at the newest and work our way back, and we're going to end up showing in November of 2027 the original first movie that was ever shown at the Panada. The name escapes me, of course, in the moment. Jim may know what it is. Is the film of
Wallace Beery something with wings? I could be wrong on that. I'm sure there's people out there who know what that one is. I did know it one time.
Yeah, and one of the things that Heather's talked about too, which is I know close to your heart, Jim, is to continue the legacy of film at the Panada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important to Heather. She knows it's important to the town, in addition to all other art forms that we're going to have there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's a real challenge because with the development of home entertainment systems, and I'd love to go to San Francisco and find foreign and independent and small budget films, but it's getting harder and harder. Theaters are closing down. So bringing films in, I think we're raising a generation of people who don't know that films were once in these big auditoriums. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, Brandon from our staff is arranged coming up, and I don't know the dates. It's a Wes Anderson Film Festival, so we're sort of getting into different structures where we're picking different directors and different styles of movie to try to group them together as series to try
Wonderful.
To gain interest.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I saw that's coming up. Let's see. You guys, of course, I imagine are booked out pretty far. So I guess when the new, any kind of changes to the booking structure will be, that'll be coming sometime in 2026, I imagine. Or as far as when you're starting to really look for new material to bring into the Panada, that's a little ways out.
Correct.
Yeah. The Wes Anderson Film Festival looks like starts on November 15th with Moonrise Kingdom. And then you've got one lined up a month after that, if I'm not mistaken, The Life Aquatic in December, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, and The Royal Tenenbaums coming, or The Fantastic Mr. Fox in January, and The Royal Tenenbaums is in there in February. So
no That'll Grand Budapest Hotel?
I know. I voted for that one, and it didn't win. We put out a social media campaign, and I voted for that. That's my favorite. It didn't
Mine
make
too.
The top four.
Mine, yeah. It is yeah, wonderful.
Maybe we can slip that in.
I was just going to say, maybe I'm sure we could find a spot.
You heard it from the executive director.
There you go. And we have a podcast of it, so no backing off on it.
Right. It's recorded.
Our time was short this morning. We'll
come back.
We have to have you back and talk at length again.
I would love that.
But welcome to the Panada Theater.
KRFY. And,
thank you.
The arts community, but you are already involved in it with teaching piano and that sort of thing. So
yes,
keep us on your radar.
I will.
Yeah, we'd love to come back, and Heather would like to come back every so often to update you guys.
Well, in January, how have their first couple months been on? What have you learned? What's the direction?
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I think that would be great. Absolutely.
We will book you for sure.
Thanks,
guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that the Bird Note people are calling us.
It's Bird Note Panic.
Let me tell you. There are devotees out there who, if they don't get their Bird Note
I'm
fix,
one of them.
Well, but you can get it also at noon and at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So we do repeat it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sean and Heather.
Thank you.
From the Panada Theater. And we're going to go on with our regularly scheduled programming now, Bird Note and the Not As Eclectic Mix, all day long here on 88.5 KRFY. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show.